Great to have you back with us in that wild card race. The Giants are two behind the Cardinals. The Phillies are one behind the Cardinals, and the Giants, of course, 15.5 now behind the Dodgers and 5 behind San Diego. So, Bruce Jenkins, that's a state of life here as we get ready on a Sunday morning.
Yeah, thanks, Marty. Interesting news from the Cardinals. Turns out that Arenado and Goldschmidt are not vaccinated, and they're going to have to miss the two-game series in Toronto coming right up Tuesday and Wednesday. Wow. And the Phillies, the other team the Giants are dealing with here, they've already gone through this. They played in Toronto without four guys, including Real Muto, and lost them both. So if the Cardinals lose both of these games, I mean, this is meaningful stuff. You know, I mean, it's a delicate issue. I mean, I really have no issue with someone who doesn't want to get vaccinated and has their reasons. But when it affects your team, it's a different deal. It's something I can't understand. It's like Andrew Wiggins of the Warriors faced this situation. He finally got the shot. He goes, either I get vaccinated or I don't play. You know, the game's at Chase Center, so I'm going to get the shot. You know, it can't be that big of a deal, but to these guys it is. So we'll see if it affects the Giants. It very well could.
Well, it could be. This is going to be a close race all the way. Bruce, Benintendi from Kansas City, he is not vaccinated, but he was named. Heck, the Mets wanted him, the Yankees wanted him, everyone wanted him, and all of a sudden, nobody wants him.
Well, you can't take a guy, especially the Yankees who deal with Toronto, you know, sort of on a constant basis and maybe even in the playoffs. You can't have it. Sorry. See you later. Can't have that.
Yeah, and that's essentially what happened to him, so we'll see what happens here. Well, a tough series for the Giants down here with the Dodgers. I mean, they're not out of anything. Every game has been like the comeback on Thursday night, the slam on the eighth inning, and here, almost a comeback in the ninth inning yesterday. They've been close games, just not going the Giants' way.
Yeah, you're right there. They're in everything, except the division race, of course. They're way out of that, but the wild card is totally in play. They're in the games with the Dodgers. They always play the Dodgers tough, and they usually wind up faring a little bit better, than coming up winless in a series. But as exasperating as everything is, and the fans are understandably, you know, a little irritable these days, they're in the games with the Dodgers. The games are exciting, and they're in the wild card race. So it's certainly not dire. It just really raises a lot of questions about what they'll do. I mean, we've talked about this, in terms of the trading deadline. But they're battling their way towards I don't know what.
They play hard. And look, yeah. They score runs late. And Susan Slusser pointed it out. I think almost all the runs they've scored in this series are in the seventh inning or later. And I was trying to think why. Well, his matchups seem to work late in the game. Maybe they're against relievers who maybe are not as good. And maybe they have a better way of doing the last few innings than the middle innings.
Well, that's the positive part of Gabe Kapler's platooning, is that he tends to have guys ready to face in a good percentage situation, a righty against a lefty or vice versa, and bringing a guy like Darren Ruff or Chuck Peterson up there, there's times you wish those guys started the game. You know, these are your power guys, but they do have a knack of bringing up a succession of good pinch hitters. This is one good thing about the universal DH. There aren't many in my mind, but without having to hit for the pitcher and constant, strategy shifts there and using up pinch hitters throughout, that's out. You know, they've got the DH and you've got a whole bunch of guys on the bench for the late innings, so that's good. But it's not so good when, you know, it's late innings and you've given up homers to Betts and Turner and Freeman and you haven't scored any.
Well, how about the top of that order? I mean, after those three, I mean, you know, look, Will Smith is a cleanup hitter. It's not exactly Gil Hodges, as I'll say, for today and Hall of Fame Sunday. But the first three, my goodness, they are locked in. They are really locked in.
Yeah, I mean, those are perfect ball players. To me, Trey Turner is the most valuable shortstop in either league. He hits for average. He hits for power. He runs like the wind. He's clutch. Freddie Freeman, he's like 19 for 18 now. You know, I mean, he's just peppering the opposite field any homers to right. And Mookie Betts, you know, the other night when he hit the home run to decide the game and then makes the catch that ends the game, you know, this is elite stuff. It's we're definitely not looking at the Giants here, and it's depressing. But you know, this is the great thing about baseball is that you know the games are still close. I mean, the Giants could have won all three of those games.
Yeah.
It sounds like a kind of a sorry lament, but they're in it. Like you say, they're not getting thrashed.
No, they're in it, and it just hasn't worked out for them.
Yeah.
But today is an important game. I'll look more in the micro now rather than the macro because there's plenty of games to go. I mean, just an eternity to go, not for the division really, but for everything else.
Yeah.
But for this one today, I mean, you've got Kershaw, and they've done well lately against Kershaw. They've gotten him out of the game early, so we'll see what they do with him today. But, Bruce, after that, it's three with Arizona that they split the first six with, and then four with the Cubs. And then it's the trade deadline. The Dodgers come in Monday, and the trade deadline, I think, is Tuesday. So I think in the micro look at baseball, which I don't like to do all the time, I'd rather look at the big picture, this is a very important week for the ball club.
Well, it is. I mean, it's a couple of series that you really should win,
right,
and ideally go into the trade and deadline thinking, yeah, we're definitely in it. Maybe they'll, you know, be tied for the wild card lead at that point. Because the Phillies and Cardinals are definitely up and down. There's they're interesting teams, but they're not going to run away with it, I don't think. And you know, it's probably a good thing the Giants are going to miss Bumgarner in Arizona. He pitched great against Washington. He's facing Soto there yesterday, and he said, "I've got the best stuff, maybe the best stuff I've had in 7 years." And he looked it. I saw some highlights. He looks great, but the Giants will miss him. But you're right. The Giants should clean up. But you know, because it's baseball, they could have a horrible week and go into the trading deadline thinking, "Geez, are we really going to be buying?" You know, I favor your theory that they do make some hay this week, but we'll see.
Yeah, they should. Bumgarner, of course, got into it yesterday. He always does. And he got it with Robles. I guess Robles hit a home run off him, and he didn't run around properly. And Bumgarner called him a clown after the game. I mean, really. You know something? Bumgarner is pitching some decent baseball right now. I wonder, well, the Giants would never go after him. Forget that. But I wonder if he has a market. I wonder if Arizona could move him like they moved Greinke or something like that.
Well, if he really does, if the hitters around the league say that it's the best they've seen him, it looks very much for real, that's a really good point. I mean, you're right. I think it's that bridge has been crossed for the Giants. But somebody could be very interested to have him as a third or fourth starter. And, you know, next thing you know, it's a big game, and he's coming up big. That would be very interesting.
Yeah, I'd like to see that. So we'll see this week. He's not going to see the Giants. And they don't see Merrill Kelly. He's pitching today. So at least that's good. They do get Zach Gallen, I think, on Wednesday. But other than that, they should be in good shape going into Arizona, then the Cubs especially. All right, it's Hall of Fame Sunday. Bruce, you and I have been talking about this guy for over 20 years, every Sunday that they have the inductions in Cooperstown. Very special day today, and let's talk about a couple of them. One, Gil Hodges finally makes it.
Oh, you know, when the Dodgers moved to L.A., my dad had come from New York, and he was a big Gil Hodges fan, and Gil was my favorite player. I wore number 14 in Little League, he was even in '59. You know, he had his great years were in Brooklyn in the '50s, but he was with the '59 Dodgers, and he had a good World Series that they won. But you know, in his prime, just forget about it. 6-7 years in a row, he's your all-star first baseman, big in the MVP voting. Really, one of the best defensive first basemen ever. Power hitter. He had like 6 years in a row with 100 more RBIs, and a tremendous guy. One of the all-time classy guys of all time, and you know, managed the New York Mets. I mean, what a career he had. He had the one glitch was in the 1952 World Series. You got the Dodgers, and they're beating their heads in trying to beat the Yankees, and they just can't do it, and they lose again, and he goes 0-21. And that was a terrible thing for him, but people forget the next three World Series he was great, and he was just great all around, and a real personal favorite of for me. I remember my dad managed to get me down by the railing before a game and at the Coliseum before they even moved to Dodger Stadium, and I got to shake Gil Hodges' hand, and I mean,
really?
my hand just disappeared inside there. I It's the biggest. It's still the biggest hand I've ever seen in my life. So that was a huge moment for me. But a family favorite. But more than that, beloved throughout the game, and it's a great day for the Hodges family.
Yeah, well deserved. Mark Ellis, you know, remember Mark Ellis, who's second baseman for the A's, ended up with the Dodgers, and he's wearing number 14. Mm-hmm. And I see him in spring training, and I said, Mark, you know, you wear number 14. It's a very famous number. And he says, yeah, it was Mike Socha's number. I said, no.
No.
It's Gil Hodges. And he kind of course, looked at me, you know, like that. But growing up in Brooklyn, for me, I was a first baseman. I had the first baseman's glove. And I would stretch with the glove in front of me, just like Gil Hodges did. So I'm glad.
That's great.
I'm glad for him. Now, the other one I'm glad about is Minnie Minoso. And just a tremendous player in the 50s for the White Sox. I remember listening to the games at the Chicago White Sox games were broadcast into Miami Beach at that time. And, boy, every time he came up, Bruce, there was trouble. Trouble. He was that good.
Yeah, you know, he might, you know, he had some power, hit for average. He hit 18 triples one year, about 18 triples. What a thing. I don't care what era you're in. He was that kind of player. And it's great how the Hall of Fame just connects. It connects the eras. I mean, this is a guy who played with Satchel Paige and Bob Feller, and he played in the Negro Leagues for 3 years.
Mm-hmm, right.
In fact, the only, I think the only World Series he ever got into was with the 1947 New York Cubans in the Negro League World Series. He just missed out. He was out of Chicago when they got to the 59 World Series, and he was gone from Cleveland when they got to the 54 series. And he's an iconic figure in both of those towns. And it's a shame he didn't get the postseason exposure that he deserved. But a wonderful guy, extremely colorful. Drove around in a big flashy Chevy and in fancy suits. And he loved. You know, he came from Cuba. He loved America and being able to be a star in America. And, and somehow he played in 7 decades professionally. I don't know if that's even possible, but thanks to a couple of stints with St. Paul, a couple of token at-bats, he played in 7 different decades. So all in all, that's a heck of an enshrinement there.
Yeah, for the White Sox, Bruce, he could steal a base in the 50s. He could hit with power.
Yeah,
and again, like I say with the Dodger lineup, when you flip that lineup and you say, where's Betts or where's Barry Bonds, whatever it is, he was that guy for the White Sox. And the White Sox chased the Yankees the whole decade.
Yeah.
And you're right, 59, he gets traded to Cleveland.
And
the White Sox win, and he's in Cleveland. Then they bring him back, and he got beaned, and you know, that was basically the end of him. But, yeah, very good. Minnie Minoso, great ambassador. I'm glad he's going in, too. Now, the other one, Tony Oliva. And, you know, Bruce, had Lavelle Neal is going to come on later in the show, you know, from Minneapolis and talk about Tony. But what a hitter this guy was. For 10 years, he was as good a hitter as anybody in baseball.
Yeah, absolutely. He's a standard-bearing kind of hitter. I remember when he came up in 64, people are going, man, this is the best rookie we've seen in a while. And meanwhile, the National League's coming up with Richie Allen, who we like to be called Dick, but then Richie Allen and Jim Ray Hart. And that was it's kind of like that in the 60s. You know, the American League, they had Oliva and they had, you know, Yaz and sort of the fading mantle. But the National League was where it was at for the outfielders, you know, with Aaron and Mays and Clemente and Billy Williams and Tommy Davis. And especially if you were in the National League, you weren't really that aware of Oliva because, you know, they didn't have interleague play. But meanwhile, he's just cranking out hits for the Twins. They did get into the 65 World Series. He had a couple great playoffs after that. But he was – people looked at him as one of the gods of hitting. Not just the numbers, but that he was a great hitting coach. I found out today he actually roomed with Rod Carew for a while. And in those days, players roomed with each other. So how many hits you got in that room?
Well, the thing with Oliva, you know, his first 2 years in the major leagues, and I'm talking about, you know, full years because he came up for 7 games, 8 games. His first 2 years, he led the American League in hitting.
Yeah,
he
just
led
right
the league
that.
In hitting. How about that?
Yeah. Yeah, that's wonderful. You know, all-star 8 years in a row, he'd lead the league in doubles and hits. And lifetime 304. I love that. That's always a pure thing. That was one thing about Minoso was 299. Oh, man, I'm sure he agonized over that ball that didn't fall in. He just But Oliva hit 304 lifetime, which is a wonderful thing, and it should be. If he was below 300, there's something. Somebody miscalculated.
Good for him to be in getting inducted today. And the other one was two more to talk about, because we'll pick up Buck O'Neill and Bud Fowler with Phil Dixon after our segment is done, who wrote a book about Buck and talks about Bud Fowler. But Jim Cott. And look, I mean, you talk about a guy in the 60s and who played into the 80s, really, and had numerous careers in baseball, and then he was a broadcaster.
Well, he pitched for 25 years.
Yeah, amazing.
That's really hard to fathom. He won, I think, 283 games. I mean, nobody today is going to reach that. It's just not that kind of a game anymore. But it wasn't just the longevity. I mean, he was a 25 game winner when he was 27, and like 8 years later, he puts together a couple more 20 win seasons. You know, he was such a good fielder. They just handed him. He won 16 Gold Gloves. They just figured, well, nobody's as good as Jim Cott. And then they can look at the numbers. So he wins 16 of those. He was a good hitter who jacked the ball out every now and then, and unbelievably reliable. I mean, if you think about 25 years as a very good pitcher, and then he goes in as a broadcaster, and he's done an awful lot for the game since then. And you know, just the greatest guy. It's like Gil Hodges, about the greatest guy you'd ever want to meet. So, yes, this is a really good Hall of Fame day.
Isn't it? And last one we'll talk about is David Ortiz going in. Big Poppy.
Well, you know, you could say he's definitely one of the greatest clutch hitters in postseason history. He did it repeatedly. When you measure him up against, you know, guys like Mantle and Ruth, I mean, those guys only had one series. You know, they played the World Series and they did it, their job. But, you know, Ortiz was in the era of, like, the postseason lasted like a month. And he was constantly delivering the big hit. And he liked to talk about that he would deliver the big hit, and not in like a Deion Sanders kind of way, just sort of matter of fact, you know, I'm going to, you know, watch out for me here because I'm going to do it. And he did. He did it repeatedly. Just a massive left-handed presence up there. And, you know, the Red Sox, they don't break through all the barriers that they got through without him in terms of, you know, finally getting to the top. So I'll tell you, it's a big day in a lot of parts of the world.
Yeah, MLB has got it on. So if you have a VCR or some,
definitely,
absolutely tape this one. This is going to be a good one today. The last thing about Ortiz, he was allegedly named in the Mitchell report, but he's got such good PR, and that was one that was just, let's see if anyone fails a test, that it was never clear. But that's the one blemish that he's got, but I think he's overcome it.
Yeah, he got past the Mitchell report, which turned out to be not, you know, 100%, you know, your gauge for these players. There were some flaws in what was determined there. And I just think David Ortiz was, he just overcame it on the strength of performance and personality, and he just willed his way into the public's favor. Mm-hmm. It never seemed to be a tremendous blemish for him outside of the initial reaction was bad, but he just overcame it. He won people over, and there's no denying the talent or the presence or the personality or any of that.
Yep, good. I agree with you 100%. Boy, what a day, huh? Interesting day. Plus, we got Kershaw against the Giants. We got Hall of Fame Day. And a week of baseball, and then we got the trade deadlines. This is a good time of year for baseball. All right, last thing today, anniversary of one of the great moments, the Pine Tar game with George Brett. I'll always remember him running out of the dugout. So I'll never forget that.
Oh, my God. So the Yankees have a 4-3 lead in the ninth inning, 1983, and Billy Martin brings in Gossage, who I was there in 1980 when Brett hit the upper deck homer off Gossage to kind of end that playoff series in Yankee Stadium. Maybe the greatest thing I've ever seen in person, because of who it was. George Brett was revered in the game and an unbelievably good hitter. So anyway, he hits this home run that puts Kansas City ahead, and this is vintage Billy Martin, and he had Don Zimmer in the dugout too. They're going, what about the bat? They were always looking at some way that maybe the other guys are trying to get away with something. There was a rule that if you put pine tar on your bat, it could only go 18 inches up the handle, from the handle on up. And they didn't have any kind of measuring device, so the umpires there's this big commotion now. What's going on here? They bring the bat out to home plate, which is 17 inches wide, and sure enough, the bat, the pine tar, was longer than that. They determined that he's doctored the bat. Next thing you know, they call him out after he wins the game. He came out of the dugout. He said, "I look like my dad charging through the house when I brought back my report card."
It was great. Great
he went
picture.
Completely wild. And he got it, and Joe Brinkman tried to stop him. Then he really went completely nuts over the umpire. And it's just one of this is one of Billy Martin's great moments. But the Royals lost a protest because another rule says that a pine tar isn't considered an illegal substance on the bat. If this is discovered, you have to replace the bat, but you don't call the guy out.
Right.
But they did, and so they wound up having to replay just that part of the game, like 25 days later, when both teams are off, they go back to Yankee Stadium. There's like 1,100 people there, and Billy Martin knows it's a joke. He puts Don Mattingly at second base, the lefty second baseman. He put Guidry in center field, and Casey finished it off in about 10 minutes, but that was pretty wild.
Well, and Lee McPhail, the president of the American League, didn't do much, but at least he ruled in the right way.
Yeah.
With this one. So,
definitely.
Yeah, if you can see the video of George Brett charging out of the dugout, that's an image I'll never forget. That's a good image, Bruce, of Brett saying it's like his father chasing him with the report card. I like that. All right, good. Great to talk to you. Have a great Sunday. Enjoy the game today, and we got a lot to look forward to for next weekend.
Boy, no kidding. Look forward to it, Marty.
All right, thanks, Bruce. All right, that is Bruce Jenkins. Always a pleasure. All right, coming up next, Phil Dixon is going to come up and talk about the book he wrote about Buck O'Neill and tell you a little bit about Bud Fowler, who also is being inducted into the Hall of Fame today. That's coming up. More right here on the Sports Leader.